Welcome to What is Going Ohm for new thought from the edge of Ohm. Each week on Ohm Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Ohm. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. There is a contagious psycho-spiritual disease of the soul, a parasite of the mind, that is currently being acted out en masse on the world stage via a collective psychosis of titanic proportions. This mind virus, which Native Americans have called Wetiko, covertly operates through the unconscious blind spots in the human psyche, rendering people oblivious to their own madness and compelling them to act against their own best interests. We've seen a lot of reflections of this over the past few years, and tonight we're going to be talking about Wetiko and what is happening to the collective consciousness with Paul Levy. Paul is a pioneer in the field of spiritual emergence, a Tibetan Buddhist practitioner, and founder of the Awakening in the Dream community in Portland, Oregon. He's also the author of several books, including Dispelling Wetiko, Breaking the Curse of Evil, Awakened by Darkness, When Evil Becomes Your Father, and his latest release, Wetiko, Healing the Mind Virus That Plagues Our World, which examines Wetiko in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic, showing that we can reframe the pandemic so as to receive the lessons and opportunities embedded in it. Paul Levy, welcome.
Yeah, hi. I'm so happy to be here, really, Sandy. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, Paul. Paul, for almost 20 years, you've been writing about this invisible, contagious, death-creating virus that no one is immune to and that has been insidiously spreading and replicating itself through the human species. Now, anyone reading that, hearing that, would immediately think of COVID-19. But of course, this is a different kinds of virus, and it has been around for a very, very long time. So let's start by telling us, what is Wetiko?
Sure. Well, the term Wetiko, it's this Native American term that is this cannibalistic energy. You could think of it as the spirit of evil, but it's a quantum phenomena that encoded within the evil, it actually is potentially helping us to awaken to who we are. But like this very simple way of understanding it, it's this psycho-spiritual disease of the soul that pervades the collective unconscious that we all have in potential. And but to the extent that we don't see it, because it operates through the unconscious, so the part of us that has this blind spot, that's how it operates. So to the extent we don't see it, it then will unwittingly, we will become the instrument to act it out. And but you know what that implies is that to heal the mind virus, because it's exactly like a mind virus as compared to a physical virus, is to see it, is to see how it operates in the world and to see how it operates within our own minds.
Well, you say that in order to survive in an unnatural society, people either dominate others or themselves become socially conditioned to accept helplessness and negativity. We've been seeing a lot of this over the last few decades. And, you know, I mean, I think it's been laid out that there is a pathway if you want to control people. You know, there is a way to do it. And a mind virus, especially now that we have the internet and it's so easy to spread a mind virus, is the way to control people. But where did this originate, and have we always been an unnatural society?
Yeah, well, you know, that's an interesting question, where it originated. And, you know, there are all these theories, it's thousands of years ago, or negative ETs, or whatever. But in a way, that's not even important. Because to me, what's more important is that it's actually, this mind virus is getting created again and again in this present moment. and in this present moment. So we're actually unwittingly colluding in the creation of the mind virus. And that's the way in. That's the way to really unlock. Because the thing about this mind virus, it holds our creative spirit. It holds our incredible creative power imprisoned within it. So to the extent that we're not consciously awake to our creative nature, and to the extent we're not consciously expressing our creative spirit, then the Wetiko mind virus, it plugs into our own creativity, because it has none. And then it turns our own creativity against us in a way that serves its agenda other than our own.
Are we really so weak that we can be so easily overtaken?
Well, the thing which is interesting, no, we have this immense creative power, and that's what the Wetiko virus doesn't want us to actually become aware of. But to the extent, you see, Wetiko, one of the major ways that it strengthens itself is to the extent that we turn away from seeing something in ourselves. So as soon as we have that ostrich policy, where we have this blind eye towards something, that feeds the Wetiko virus. And so to the extent that we do that, we're unwittingly investing in the very energy that's killing us.
We saw, you know, harking back to what happened at the beginning of the year, after the election, you know, we saw people behaving in ways that I think for many were shocking. You know, we just didn't expect that people would behave in such strange ways, such violent ways, when all of the evidence, you know, pointed to something different. And you could see in interviews on TV with people, why are you doing this? And their answers, they didn't even know. It was as if they were in a trance. Is this the kind of effect that it has on us?
Yeah. Totally. Because Wetiko, like I was saying, it operates through the blind spots, and it's this transpersonal energy. So it's more powerful than the ego. And because of that, it can possess a person at any given moment. It can take one over, and it can get in the driver's seat of our vehicle. And you know, when that happens, we're oblivious. We have no idea that we're actually acting out impulses that aren't ours, but are feeding the mind virus. And then, you know, we become the vector, the instrument, the conduit to act it out unconsciously. And then we become, sort of like this automaton, and it's a real form of self-hypnosis. Like we've hypnotized ourselves by the creative genius of our own mind, but because we're not conscious of our creative agency, that energy, you know, like I was saying, gets turned against us in a way that we hypnotize ourselves.
Is this something that is cyclical? You know, does it go around in cycles and, you know, it ebbs and flows, or is it always there?
Yeah, I would say it's chronically there in potential. It's a quantum phenomena, so it's in potential. And, but certain things in the environment, certain events will catalyze it. You know, for example, with the pandemic, and all of a sudden there's this fear just being put out by, for example, by the mainstream media. And as soon as there's fear, you see, the Wetiko virus feeds off of fear, because it feeds off of it whenever we see other people, they're separate from us, there's polarization. That's a feast for the Wetiko virus. And the thing about the Wetiko virus, it's contagious. It's a mind virus that's contagious. So when all of a sudden fear is inculcated in the population, that reinforces itself, and that's where Wetiko is a collective psychosis. And, you know, we're in the middle of it.
So it's a bit like, hysteria that can occur at a concert or a mass gathering, and people don't know why suddenly they get so emotional. But before they know it, you know, their emotions are running over. It's the same kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's not even a personal thing, because it's an archetypal energy that, like I was saying, can literally take us over. And then we act it out without awareness, because one of the most amazing things about Watiko is that it's an inner disease of the soul that explicates itself through the medium of the outside world. Now, that's amazing, because just to comment on that, so the inner condition of a soul under the thrall of Watiko actually is able to extend itself out into the world and express itself through the medium of the outside world. Now, what that means that what's playing out in the outer world is actually reflecting the inner psyche. So if any of us, individually or collectively, are under the spell of Watiko, that actually is getting reflected in the outer world. And when you begin to see that, that's to begin to see this is like a dream, what I call the dream-like nature of reality. And once you begin to see that, that's the medicine that heals Watiko.
It's not an entity as such, is it? It's not an evil being that exists and feeds off of our energy.
Let me clarify on that. So Watiko, it has no independent existence whatsoever. So if people are hearing about this and they're getting afraid, no, there's nothing to be afraid of at all. Watiko, it doesn't even exist, okay? Separate from our own mind, and yet it can kill us. You see, that's the paradox. And what that's pointing at is the incredible, untapped, unconscious, creative power that each one of us, we already have it. We're in possession of it 24/7. We have this unbelievable creative agency, but to the extent we don't know it, then Watiko plugs into it and turns it against us. Because the thing about Watiko, it has no creativity on its own, but it's a master impersonator. In the apocryphal text of the Bible, they talk about Watiko word for word. They call it the counterfeiting spirit, but it got edited out of the Bible. That's why it's in the apocryphal text, because I point out in my next book that Watiko was on the editorial board and it doesn't want to be exposed. So that counterfeiting spirit, it impersonates us in this fictitious way. Oh, I have these wounds, I'm limited, I'm not creative. It'll present us this fictitious image of who we are. And as soon, if we're not awake, we then identify with its image. And as soon as we do that, we've given ourselves away and we've identified with who we're not. And that's a recipe for madness. And that's Watiko.
It's very hard to get your head around this. And what interests me is that it's very easy to say, oh, don't be stupid, this can't possibly exist, which is exactly the sort of thing that Watiko will have you doing, because of the blind spots.
Yeah. Right. Well, the thing is, it's like that, if you think, if you have the thought, oh, Watiko doesn't exist, this is, crazy, this is new age woo-woo, that thought form is inspired by Watiko. And so because it operates through our minds, that's the point. It operates through our thinking, through our beliefs, through our perceptions. And, what I'm trying to point out, you see, the thing about Watiko, it's the most important thing in the world, bar none. It's not even a competition. If we don't, and it doesn't make a difference what name you call it. Every spiritual tradition has, from time immemorial, has been pointing at Watiko just with different symbols and different names. And if we don't see it, we're doomed. I mean, take a look at what we're doing as a species. We're collectively enacting suicide. We're destroying the biosphere, the life support system of our planet, and that is actually an externalization reflecting back to us how Watiko, how it works within an individual psyche. So if we don't come to terms with it, if we don't see it, then we're doomed. But the point that I'm saying is that encoded in the Watiko virus, it's actually helping us. If it didn't exist, we would have to invent it. It's catalyzing the evolution of our species.
Yes, I mean, there's always a polarity, isn't there? There's always another way to look at it. I mean, you point out, correlation with COVID-19, and many people have said the same thing about COVID. This is actually helping us look at the world and what we're doing in the world in a different way.
Yeah, no, totally. And what I point out in my next book, because I have two new books coming out on Watiko, is that you know, the COVID virus is actually this lower level emanation of the higher dimensional Wetiko virus of the mind. Because when you think about COVID, if you think about it, oh, it's just this physical virus. No, it's not just physical. That's one of its vectors. Take a look at how it's affected our planet. It's affected our behavior. It's affected our we have fear. It's in our dreams. It's how we perceive. It changes how we dress, how close we get to each other. It's affected our behavior in every dimension. The point is that it's not just a physical virus. It has this emotional vector, a mental vector, a spiritual vector. It's multidimensional. And all of that gets, you know, it goes through the psyche. And the psyche is the arena of the Wetiko virus. So the point is that the coronavirus is actually not separate from the Wetiko virus. And how it changes our behavior, it is actually mediated through the mind virus. You know, and the point is that the coronavirus can actually, the physical aspect of the coronavirus and all of its other vectors can help us to see the mind virus. And that's the real deadly virus, because if we don't see it, it's going to kill us. But it doesn't want to be seen, because when it's seen, we take away, its power is gone, and we actually connect with our own power. So it'll do everything in its power to try to hide and to not be seen.
Do you know, this is really interesting. I read Hank Wesselman's book, Re-Enchantment, last mm-hmm. year. And I was reading it in the middle of the night when I couldn't sleep. And I suddenly came across his, you know, chapter on egregores. And it just hit me like a thunderbolt, because I realized that I had been getting into a thought process that was really quite negative. And I suddenly thought, it kind of took me to a place where I could see what was happening and shook me out of that. And I think many people have said through this, you know, especially in the spiritual arena, through this pandemic, is that we have created this. We ourselves have called this in because we, you know, we want totally. Transformation. Yeah,
absolutely.
So the dichotomy
So the thing is, you know,
I was going to say the dichotomy is we're creating it, yet we're not aware we're creating it, and so therefore, it is overpowering us.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, that's what I talk about in my work, and you know, and in that book by Wesselman, I mean, he quotes from Dispelling Wetiko. You know, he has a whole section on the Wetiko mind virus. And as you know, it has to do with that, with the phenomena that you were talking about of the egregores, but Wetiko is a dreamed up phenomena. It's something that we are collectively dreaming up into materialization in our world and through our minds, you know, and in our minds. And what that means is that being that it's a dreamed up phenomena, we can undream it. That's within our power.
So it's like tulpas, where you can create a thought form and you put so much energy into it that you can kind of give it a life, in a sense, of its own. It's like American Gods, Neil Gaiman's
right.
book.
Well, the thing about the tulpas is that it's you know, they say it's harder. It's not that hard to dream up into materialization these seeming entities, but it's harder to undream it, you know, because they then convincingly take on, you know, an appearance of actually existing. And, you know, so the thing about Wetiko, like I was saying, it doesn't even exist, but yet subjectively we experience it as if it's an entity. So that's important. That's our subjective experience. We experience it, you know, as if it exists, but ultimately speaking, it has no existence whatsoever. It doesn't exist objectively. It doesn't have any independent existence separate from our own mind. You see, it's pointing at all of us have this incredibly unimaginably vast creative power. But to the extent we don't know that, then just like in a dream, we split off from our power. It gets projected out into the dream, dreamed up into the dreamscape, and other people or the state picks up our power, you know, for us that we're not picking up, and it turns it against us. That's what's happening.
So once we become aware of it, is awareness enough to break its hold?
No, because as soon as we become aware, I mean, that's the first step. But then you can pretty much guarantee that at a certain point that Watiko is going to turn our becoming aware of it. It'll, at the first chance that we our defenses are down or we fall asleep for a moment, it will turn that awareness, you know, to serve its agenda. So the point is you have to develop, you know, just this practice of having this awareness, of being mindful. But then, you know, one of the key medicines for Watiko is to connect with your creativity, because we are creative beings. We're creating our experience of ourselves and our experience of our world each and every moment. But to the extent that we're doing it unconsciously and we feel like a victim or a passive observer, that opens the door for Watiko to come in. And so, you know, it's the awareness combined with, you know, our creative power and expressing that and embodying that. That's the solution.
So it makes me smile when I think about it, because it's one of those things that it almost feels like, you know, you can kind of grasp it, but then it slips away from you. And it is so clever, and we are so clever, and we are so creative that we can convince ourselves that it's not real.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about Watiko. It's a trickster. It's so elusive and cunning that as soon as you think you have it, it slips through your fingers. Or as soon as you think, oh, it's like this, well, then you can be sure it's not like that. It's something else. And, you know, I mean, it's what all mythologies have been pointing at, you know, this entity that is, you know, just shape-shifting and all of that. But it actually is helping us, because it's helping us to make the best, you know, to really tap into our divine endowment. You know, we have this inheritance. You know, we're not separate from the source, from our source. And that source is creative. And like I've been saying, we're creative beings. And so, you see, the thing about Watiko, like when I was saying before, it's actually catalyzing our evolution. But if we don't get the message, it's similar to like a dream. When you have a dream and you don't get the message, it recurs. But it recurs more and more in amplified form. And if there's a negative shadow aspect, it just gets more and more exaggerated until we get the message of what it's actually communicating to us. That's exactly our situation. We have dreamed up the Watiko epidemic. It's revealing something to us that it's most important to know. If we don't get the message, it's just going to amplify in its shadow aspect more and more and more. So I'm basically just trying to help people to see what it's teaching us about ourselves.
So you talked about it being a disease of the soul. You know, I mean, my question would be, why would we want to create this in the first place? But if our soul is dissipating in a sense, then there's the answer, I imagine.
Yeah, well, you know, to answer your question, I mean, and it's a great question, because one way of framing it is, okay, here we are as a species and we're destroying ourselves. The question is, how come we're doing that, right? And I point out, well, we're doing that because we don't know how not to do it. And the act of doing it is the very way that we're teaching ourselves how to not destroy ourselves, which we clearly don't know, or we wouldn't be destroying ourselves. So you see, the thing about Watiko, encoded in the pathology is the vaccine. It contains its own medicine. It's a quantum phenomena. It depends how we observe it. So if we don't recognize that it's a gift, that it's revealing to us everything we need to know in order to wake up, if we don't recognize that, it'll kill us. But if we do recognize that, then we get its benefits.
So we've created something to make us more conscious.
Yeah, absolutely. No, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Wow, that's absolutely fascinating. We're going to go to break now, Paul, and we'll get into more of this when we come back. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and my guest today is Paul Levy, pioneer in the field of spiritual emergence, founder of Awakening in the Dream Community in Portland, Oregon, and author of several books, including Watiko, Healing the Mind Virus That Plagues Our World. We'll be back with more from Paul Levy after this break. We'll be right back.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Vox Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Join me every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio for Vox Novus, the new voice.
Mental health. Most people think it means mental illness. Most people are wrong. Mental health doesn't apply to just some of us. It applies to everyone. We're all susceptible to anxiety and depression. They're human conditions. And no person should ever feel embarrassed, ashamed, or be discriminated against for being human. Cracked the Podcast strips away the shame, fear, and stigma by expanding the conversation into areas less often visited. From brain and body chemistry, hormones, food, nutrition, trauma, and the microbiome, to pharmaceutical drugs, psychedelic substances, meditation, visionary experiences, and spiritual awakenings. Cracked the Podcast will explore them all, including the notion that, for many, breakdown can be the beginning of breakthrough. For in the words of singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen, there is a crack in everything. It's where the light gets in. Cracked the Podcast, slaying the dragons of mental health. Join co-hosts Sandy Sedgbeer and Rebecca Shaper on the first and third Thursday of every month at 12 noon Eastern Time.
Coping 19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Welcome back. Paul Levy, you call Wetiko the greatest epidemic sickness known to humanity. You say that families are petri dishes for Wetiko, unknowingly harbouring the virus, watering it with smiles, causing it to grow in virulence until its power is immense and its destructiveness entire. In your book, Awakened by Darkness, When Evil Becomes Your Father, you shared the harrowing personal story of the extreme psychological abuse that you received from your emotionally disturbed father, who carried the virus and projected it onto you. And you shared that story because in sharing it, you're also telling the story of what our world is going through. At what point in that whole journey did you become aware of Wetiko?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that question. So yeah, so that's the context for how I came to discover my work with Wetiko, is that I had a direct, unmediated encounter with it in my family through my father. And it was having a direct direct experience with archetypal evil, and it almost killed me, and it wound up destroying my entire family. You know, the Wetiko bug had gotten into the petri dish, like you said. But then, to answer your question, so it created so much suffering in me that I went so deeply inwards into my mind, and I had a spiritual awakening in 1981, a life-transforming, over-the-top spiritual awakening, you know, in which I was beginning to recognize this was a collectively shared dream, and I was so excited. Within a day, I got thrown in my first psychiatric hospital, and I got misdiagnosed, and maybe the next year and a half, four other times or so, I you know, would get hospitalized and always diagnosed as, oh, you're mentally ill, you're going to have this illness for the rest of your life, you're going to need to be on medication until your dying breath. And I knew they didn't know what they were talking about, but I began to recognize, oh my God, this same evil force that was coming through my father had now, it had changed channels and was coming through psychiatry. And I was fortunate because it was so obvious to me that I was having a spiritual awakening. You know, I just never bought into the diagnosis for even a nanosecond. So I just extricated myself when I could from psychiatry and continued the awakening. But, you know, I was traumatized very much by that. But it was that's when I began to realize what TICO is enfolded within the non-local field, that it's potentially everywhere. It wasn't just coming through my father. And I was lucky in that these incredible encounters with archetypal evil and with Watiko and with abuse, actually more and more I began to realize, wait a second, this is showing me something. This is like helping me and teaching me. And so somehow I was fortunate enough to be able to assimilate, and I'm still a work in progress, you know, so many years later. But that's where I slowly began to discover my work, and I'm thankful because it's medicine for Watiko, and it's getting out all over the world and helping people.
You know, that particular book, Caroline Mace declared that it is not only a magnificent examination of the nature of evil, it's an essential one, especially in these chaotic times. She said evil does exist, it's a real force. I mean, how would you define evil?
Yeah, well, that's a challenging question, to define something that doesn't lend itself to language and is sort of, you know, undefinable. Mm. But one way of understanding evil, and I'm not talking personal evil, I'm talking archetypal evil, the stuff that myths and fairy tales talk about, that it's really this destructive force that's anti-life. And, you know, and the thing I'm trying to point at, you see, so many well-intentioned people, spiritual people, smart people, they're like, no, I don't want to think about evil. I don't want to put my attention on it. You know, it doesn't exist, type of thing. And I point out that by having that point of view, you're unwittingly feeding the very evil you imagine doesn't exist. Because Watiko, the evil of Watiko, feeds off of us turning a blind eye. You know, when we turn away from, when we are in avoidance of having relationship with a part of ourselves, that feeds Watiko. And so, you know, the thing that I'm saying and that Carolyn Mace is saying and many, many people are saying is that, you know, and I'm not somebody who's like this theology professor or metaphysician. Just psychologically, evil is as real as we are. And if people just deny that, well, look all around us at all the evil that's playing out. And it's important to name it. Just like in a fairy tale, if you don't find the name of the demon has power over you. But as soon as you find the right name, all of a sudden you begin to take away its power. So it's important for us. It's in our face to come to terms with whatever this thing called evil is. And what I'm pointing out is that encoded within it, hidden within the evil, hidden within Watiko, is actually, it's helping us. And that's the game changer when you see that.
Yeah, I totally get that. The thing that puzzles me is that, I mean, you're talking about the shadow side, and none of us wants to admit that we've got one. And, you know, if the left brain is really all about making sense of things and rationalizing, it's never going to want to admit that we have a shadow side. So
right.
We're kind of in this fight with ourselves. I mean, if there's a part of us that really wants to wake up and be conscious, and yet we're physically through, you know, the construction of the brain, unable to be able to do that, how do we get beyond this?
Yeah, no, but that's not true. You, I just experienced you putting yourself under a spell when you said, oh, we're not able to do that. No, I mean, that's not true. That's as if you hold that viewpoint, you will evoke a universe that confirms that viewpoint and giving you all the evidence. And then you think, oh, well, it's really true what I'm seeing, that we can't do that. But no, it's completely within our power. And that one of the ways to do that, to see our shadow, is to connect with other people, to have a real spiritual community where we have a commitment to actually reflect back to each other our experience. And oftentimes we see other people's shadows in a way that they can't see for themselves. And if people are really committed to doing their inner work, when it's just like in a dream, if a dream character holds up this mirror and is reflecting back a shadow part of you, you'd be kind of a fool to at least not consider what they're reflecting. And so, and that creates the container in the community where we can all help each other to do our inner work. Instead of it being a competitive sport, no, we can get in phase with each other and understand. You see, the thing about Wetiko is that it's you know, in essence, it has to do with identifying ourselves as existing in a way that we don't. It involves thinking that we exist as a separate self. And as soon as we hold that viewpoint, we're going to dream up the universe being dreamlike to reflect back the, you know, to give us all the proof of the evidence that we do exist as a separate self in a self-perpetuating feedback loop in which we hypnotize ourselves. But when you begin to recognize the dreamlike nature, what that means is you begin to see that we're interdependent with each other, that we're interconnected, that there is no separate self, and that if I help anybody else, it helps me because we're not separate. That's the viewpoint that begins to dispel Wetiko.
Well, you know, there was a time when we did live like that. We did live in community. And, you know, it was, for the good of the tribe, so to speak. And we've lost that. But what we're seeing now is so many people are moving back to community. So there has to be evidence there that, you know, consciousness is, on the rise and people are waking up.
Yeah, no, totally. And that's why in Tibetan Buddhism, they'll talk about, you know, the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, the jewel, the three jewels, the teacher, the teaching, and the Sangha is the community. And they say the point is that it's one of the fundamental, most important parts of awakening is having spiritual community. And some teachers are even saying it's the most important of the three jewels, you know. And so that's a way of dealing with evil, because when you confront evil, if you just try to have it out just by yourself, you know, that's not going to go well. But when you actually are able to connect with other people who see who you are, who are able to, like, you know, connect with you and support you in your wholeness, you know, that in a way empowers us to be able to, you know, to have it out, to deal with evil in a way where we just don't get destroyed. Okay. Now, if I could just say one thing, because it's really important. This Wetiko idea, this isn't just my idea. You know, like I've been saying, every spiritual tradition talks about it. Creative artists throughout history have envisioned it. Thinkers, philosophers have talked about it. You know, it's just in all different ways. And for example, the great psychiatrist Carl Jung, he was completely switched on to Wetiko, but he didn't have the name, and he kept on calling it different names. But the one name that he would use more than others was totalitarian psychosis. Okay, and that's very interesting, because think about what Wetiko is. It's an inner disease of the soul that expresses itself through the medium of the outside world. So when Wetiko gets into an individual person's psyche, all of a sudden it'll colonize the psyche. It'll subsume all the healthy parts of the psyche into the service of the pathogen. It'll create a shadow government. It'll dictate to the ego so as to, you know, to act out its agenda as it takes over the host, the individual person. That process that I just described is literally playing out in the body politic of the world, right? And think about what Wetiko is. It's an inner disease of the soul that actually expresses itself through the outer world. So when you begin to see that the fascist, you know, powers and energy that are taking over our world are actually reflecting the inner process of what's going on in a psyche that's afflicted with Wetiko, that's when you begin to wake up. So that's pointing at that Wetiko is helping us to wake up, but only if we recognize what it's revealing to us.
Yeah. I mean, it was so interesting at the beginning of the pandemic when everywhere on Facebook, people were talking about how, you know, the rivers were cleaner, the air was cleaner, and it was a stark contrast to what we'd known before, and people were shocked. And some people may have gone back to their old ways of thinking, but some people have been changed forever by that.
Yeah. And just an example, in the beginning stages of the pandemic, so many people were saying, oh my God, this is like surreal. This is so surreal. Yeah, exactly. It's easier to recognize the dreamlike nature as things get more surreal. you know. So it's another example. Encoded in the seeming in the darkness is a gift. And the thing which is interesting, we typically think that, oh, to see, I want to see the light, that's illumination. And yeah, that's an aspect of illumination, but seeing the dark is another form of illumination too.
Well, absolutely. I mean, when you see the dark and you see what you don't want, there's a great motivation to change things. You've been doing this work for about 20 years. Did you ever envision that we might see such an external expression of this in something like this pandemic?
Yeah, well, to be honest, I mean, I kind of sensed it, you know. I mean, people now are saying to me, oh my God, you know, your work, you know, you were like foretelling the future, you were, you know, the, whatever. And I don't feel that at all. I've just been seeing that to the extent that we don't recognize, you know, whatever you call it, Watiko or whatever, it's just going to amplify more and more to get our attention, and God only knows what form it's going to take. And so, yeah, with what's playing out now, I mean, since the pandemic happened, you know, it's orders of magnitude, you know, more just weird and crazy and intense than it's ever been. But it's not like that's been a surprise at all, you know. And yeah, I wasn't predicting the future. No, I was just seeing the deeper archetypal process that was happening in the present. And you know, that's really all that I'm pointing at. And to the extent that that's just in the unconscious, then it will manifest, you know, in a this destructive way.
Mm. So anyone listening to this, you know, who's thinking, wow, how would I know if I'm infected? You know, how that is that first glimpse, isn't it, that's going to make all the difference? Because you've got to know that you're infected in order to change it.
Yeah, but the thing is, we're all infected in potential. I mean, it pervades the collective unconscious. And think about it. Think about who among us hasn't acted out their unconscious, you know, in a way, oh, that's against our best interest. That's destructive. Whether, oh, I have this addictive, you know, pattern or habitual pattern, or, you know, I'm traumatized. And trauma is a way of understanding Watiko, because think about it. You know, we're all in trauma. You know, and not only since the pandemic, but even before. I mean, I've been saying, you know, for years that I have PTSD, and we all do. Now, if you think about what trauma is, trauma, you become traumatized by something, you know, historically back in time, but then that's not happening anymore. But you know, if we're traumatized, we then internalize the trauma, and the way we try to heal from the trauma is the very thing that creates the very trauma we're trying to heal from, in a self-perpetuating feedback loop, okay? But what that means is that that compulsion to repeat the trauma, which is the pathology of trauma, encoded in that, we're trying to experience something. We're trying to discharge the locked-up energy that's fueling that traumatic compulsive recreation. And to the extent that we don't consciously experience that, then we're fated to just repeat it again and again. And that's the pathology of trauma. But like I'm pointing at, encoded in our acting out, you know, that pathological aspect, something we're actually trying to re-experience, to consciously experience the very trauma that by its nature was so overwhelming we weren't able to integrate and to experience consciously. So it's another example that encoded in the seeming poison or the pathogen is the solution.
Can we ever defeat it completely?
Yeah, well, to think that we can't is a you know, that's the perspective of Watiko, because quantum physics, you see, and I point out that quantum physics, I wrote a book about quantum physics a couple years ago, and quantum physics is completely offering us the medicine for Watiko, because quantum physics is showing us, hey, this universe doesn't exist objectively in the way we think it does, if we think it's separate from us, and that we're just passively observing it. But on the contrary, our act of observation is literally influencing the universe observed, which is pointing out that our act of observation is creative, okay? And to see that, you know, that's the rabbit hole where you discover your creative agency. And what quantum physics is saying is that before a quantum entity is observed, It exists in this incredible potentiality of any and every state it could ever possibly exist in. Up until the moment we observe it, then it actualizes into one form that it takes, and all the other possibilities, they just disappear into these parallel worlds. But what that means is unbelievably profound, because what that's saying is that even if one of those potentialities is incredibly, highly, ridiculously unlikely, it could be this very moment that that unlikely possibility manifests. And to bring that into, you know, present day, that means that our species actually waking up and having a spiritual awakening such that sufficient number of us have the recognition of the dreamlike nature of who we are, of our creative agency, we've integrated our shadow sufficiently, we can connect with each other and we can dream ourselves awake. Quantum physics is saying that is completely, totally possible. And if you're not thinking that, if you're not envisioning that, then what are you thinking? You know?
Absolutely, yeah. You founded the Awaken in the Dream community in Portland. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that community. Is it a community where people, you know, live like, you know, a community like Damanhur or
No, it's not, and it's not local in the sense that more and more now there are Awakening in the Dream groups that are, you know, that are sprouting up all over the world, you know, based on my work, and you know, there's only one of me, so I'm trying to, you know, to really to help with the formation of those. But it's basically people who are awakening to the dreamlike nature. And, you know, it's just been in my living room, you know, for, it's been over 25 years I've been doing these groups. You know, every week I have three or four, or now I have like six of them every, it's just, you know, I mean, like I'm saying, it's a lot, but it's people who are awakening to the dreamlike nature, who are coming together. And what we're recognizing is that there is a way of hanging out and of translating our experience with each other and in ourselves that actually can help us to deepen our awakening and to deepen other people's awakening. So instead of creating, you know, separation and misunderstanding and projecting our shadow, and all of that happens, but that becomes the doorway, because that's Watiko. When you have the intention to transduce light, guaranteed you're going to invite a guest, you know, that's the Watiko virus that creates separation and misunderstanding, and we project our shadow and we don't see each other. But what I'm pointing at is that that's the doorway to inquire into that. When that separative stuff happens, that is the doorway to deepen our connectedness and to even more amplify our awakening. So it's a profound way of hanging out. It's totally natural. It's available for everyone. I've been trying to get this out for 25 years. And so that's, and I'm not even in the role, I mean, yeah, I get paid for it. I'm the one who had the vision and I facilitate the groups, but I, as much as anybody, get in, I act out my unconscious, I'll get triggered. And then when that happens, then other people in the group will pick up the role of facilitator, because it's just a role in the field, and they'll help to help me to get to what in me is, what unconscious shadow part of me is being touched. So it's a real community in that it's not hierarchical.
You also offer private sessions on your website. What sort of private sessions are they?
No, and that's true. I offer private sessions, and I never know how to answer that question, because how can I? It's a dream. And so just like, you know, somebody says, oh, tell me what you do in your private sessions, and I always answer, I have no idea, you know, because we'll just see what gets dreamed up in the moment with that particular person. So in a way, I just really try to connect with the person, enter their dreaming process, and in a sense, you know, unfold, you know, what they're dreaming about in their life, you know, so that all of a sudden I'm kind of supporting them or helping reflect back to them. And it just always seems to be really, really helpful, you know.
So you said you're writing two more books. What more do you have to say about this subject?
Oh, well, okay. So on the one hand, I've already written the classic, or a classic book on Watiko, Dispelling Watiko, you know, and that came out 2013, the first month of 2013, and it's selling. It's been out 8.5 years, and every month now it's selling more and more and more, because I think I was ahead of my time, and the world is catching up to it. But there is so much more to say, because the Watiko, it's this revelation. It's a living revelation. And so I'm continually just getting downloads about the profundity and the multidimensionality of it. So, you know, there's something, because I'm very fond of coining phrases, and I've coined a phrase, premature comprehension syndrome, something like that, PCS. And that is, somebody will say, oh, what is Watiko? I've heard about this name. And I start telling them about it, and after 30 seconds, they say, oh, no, I get it, I understand. That's premature comprehension syndrome, where it's this unbelievably, radically profound, multidimensional idea. So I wrote one book, and then I kept on getting downloads, so I wrote a second book, and then that continued, and now I'm finishing up my third book, just on Watiko. And I imagine that I'm going to write more on the topic too.
So, premature comprehension syndrome, is that a little bit like, the hundredth monkey theory? You know, if enough people, you're creating a morphic field. If enough people understand this or comprehend this, then you only have to say a couple of words to someone, and they've automatically got it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's, you know, that 100th monkey phenomena is exactly it. When, you know, and I feel that that's getting closer and closer to happening, that as people get more open to really, you know, the profundity of the Watiko idea, and when sufficient number of people, like, you know, take it online to their psyche and really understand it, and it involves doing their own inner work, because it's not an external thing, then that creates a morphic field, absolutely, where when that critical mass is reached, that's where there could be a collective, you know, global awakening, for sure.
Yeah, and I remember having a conversation with a scientist called Carl Kellerman some years ago, who wrote books about the global mind, and that's the point at which it switches, isn't it? When enough of us have that consciousness, then we're informing, you know, the universe, and the universe is reflecting back at us. So that's
exactly it. That's exactly it. It's like, we're these cells in this, you know, this multidimensional organism, and we're not separate. And when sufficient number of us, when we have light, that light, the light of consciousness, that immediately just gets, you know, sort of deposited into the greater morphic field, into the psi bank, so to speak, and it becomes a feedback loop where it just self-generates more and more light in the universe and in each one of us.
One last quick question, Paul, as we're almost out of time. You know, I mentioned earlier, is this a cyclical thing? I mean, is it possible that, yes, we do become awake and we do change, you know, we do defeat Watiko and then we fall again, and it just becomes this constant, you know, circular.
Well, yeah, if I could just say so, I point out in one of my next books, I mean, it's like, you know, having a recurring dream, it's like there's a feeling of, oh, we've been here before. We're right at the event horizon of, oh, are we going to just blow ourselves up and destroy our species? And then, you know, it'll take, you know, billions of years for the Earth and, you know, the biosphere to regenerate, and then we'll be back right at the same point, and then we'll blow ourselves up again, and it's happened again and again and again. And maybe this time, in this present incarnation of that process, this might be the time where we get it, and we realize, oh, we don't have to do that. We can avert that self-created catastrophe and actually help ourselves to wake up. We can dream ourselves awake. And that's the evolution. Then we are participating in our own evolution. Then we're finally getting what all of this is about. And so that's what I'm dreaming.
Good. I can't wait to read the next books.
Well, thank you.
Paul, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a delight to have this conversation with you.
Yeah, I just want to thank you so much. I feel really honored. Thank you.
Thank you. Watiko, Healing the Mind Virus That Plagues Our World, published by Inner Traditions. And for more information about Paul Levy's work, his sessions, and everything else he's doing and writing, visit awakeninthedream.com. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. You can learn more about me and the No BS Spiritual Book Club at sedgbeer.com. Meantime, I'll be back with another edition of What Is Going On at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.